Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here Thursday, May the 27th, 2021. 16 coming up on 17 minutes past the hour. And we've got a great day of programming here for you on WWGH Radio. Don't forget, On the Air with Glenn Coble will be on today from 10 a.m. till 12 noon. His guest will be naturalist at the Tallgrass Trail here in Marion, James Anderson. And then from 12:10 until 1 p.m. today, we have Swap Shop with Glenn Coble. And remember, you can put all your items on the air, new and used. And then yard sales are a big thing right now as we head into the Memorial Day weekend. And the Adam the Computer Guy show today from 2:10 until 3 p.m. Now, tomorrow morning, here on the station, starting at 8:10 a.m. until 1 in the afternoon, we're going to have our big pre-Memorial Day show, and we've got a lot of special things planned for tomorrow morning you're not going to want to miss. Tune in tomorrow morning from 8:10 until 1 p.m. Very interesting things to do with Marion history and beyond tomorrow. It will be a very unique day. And also, don't forget, one of the rare days we take off every year is Monday. We will not be in the office on Monday, Memorial Day, with any live shows. The official first day of summer and the last day of May. So tomorrow will be the last day of May that I'm on the air this year, but of course we have the new program on Sunday morning from 11:10 until 12 p.m. Study His Word with Pastor Craig that will be on live Sunday morning, so don't forget about that. Now, this morning, for the two-hour duration, we are joined by one of my favorite people. She was here earlier on in the week, and it's great to catch up with her anytime we can. She is the 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow. Mary Ellen, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, Scott. good to be on.
It's always good to speak with you. We are now through the first round of Vax-a-Million. We've got our two winners from last night. How do you think it all played out?
Well, I guess there's one person happy, the person that won the million, and then the person that won the scholarship. So I don't know about everybody else. They're probably a little disappointed.
You know, Mary Ellen, one thing I was surprised about, Governor DeWine appeared on a few shows yesterday. I think he was on CNN. I think he was on MSNBC. And he keeps saying that vaccination numbers are up because of this, but he's not giving us any numbers.
Is that right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they're not official or what it is, but the press release we got from the lottery last night, I believe, said 5.1 million Ohioans vaccinated, and we have about close to 12 million people in Ohio, so we're still not at half.
No, that's right. And they said Pennsylvania, I guess, is way up there. I was impressed with, I can't remember the figure, but it was pretty high.
What is it here in Ohio? It's an ongoing question for everybody that is keeping us below 50%, even offering $1 million.
Yes, I'm surprised. I had heard what he said, that the numbers were up, and yeah, I wish we would hear the numbers. I would like to know.
Did you know, we talked about this earlier in the week, and I talked about this with Governor Strickland and Mayor Schertzer, who was on earlier in the week, that this had to be handled very carefully to not come off as a political event with Mike DeWine involved in the drawing and the aftermath. And he certainly was front and center last night in the press release I got from the Ohio Lottery. Mike DeWine was there congratulating the winner, making sure his name was in the press releases. What do you make of that?
Well, evidently, you know, it's going to be political. That was the natural thought when the whole thing came out.
Do you think in the end this is going to help him regain favor in his own party?
I don't know. I was listening to Renacci the other morning talking about, you know, his possibly running, and there is one thing. Mike DeWine knows how to campaign. He campaigns with all guns going, and so, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
What did you make of the Renacci interview?
Well, I thought it was, I think he's going to run, is what I thought.
By the end, I thought, you know, if this is a guy who's not running, he certainly sounds like it.
Yes, that's right.
Were you surprised that this four-term congressman, Jim Renacci from Ohio, was so critical of an incumbent Republican governor?
Oh, I was very surprised. You know, 20 years ago, you would never have heard that. The Republican Party was lockstep together. I mean, that no longer. It's so totally different.
Has this pandemic been what put Mike DeWine on the outs with his party?
Well, it probably helped. I don't know. I don't know totally if that was it, but it probably helped for, well, you know, the pandemic, I thought, probably changed a lot of people's minds on different things. I thought Mike DeWine did a fairly good job, really, with it.
Well, it's very interesting because some of the polling that I have seen, and I think Congressman Renacci pointed this out the other morning, that Mike DeWine has a higher approval rating in Ohio with Democrats right now than with Republicans.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. You know, it doesn't make sense from the political standpoint, but it makes sense from what he's been doing.
You have run for re-election. I think only one election in your entire career did you come up short in. What does Mike DeWine have to do? He certainly is a seasoned politician. He has said he wants a second term. What does he have to do to turn this thing around to get his party's nomination?
He has a tendency to go pretty negative on his opponents, I've noticed. I remember his running against John Glenn and running against Rich Cordray, but in particular, he gets vicious. And I think that has an effect.
When it comes to a guy like Jim Renacci, I believe the number is $36 million. Is it 360 or 36? He's worth a lot of money. He's been very successful in business. Will that help him in a campaign?
Well, it should, but, I mean, usually people that have been successful know how to run their campaign, if you follow the studying that, and I think that will be a help to him, yes.
Jim Renacci did come fairly close to defeating Sherrod Brown last time he ran for office. I think it was 3 or 4 percentage points. If he can come that close to defeating a very popular Democrat in Ohio, do you think he's got a shot of knocking Mike DeWine off in this primary?
Well, I don't know, Scott. You know, you just can't predict until you see what goes on. If you watch a campaign and sometimes you can't even tell until election night. You know, you have no idea because the polling anymore has been sort of not very good. And it's going to be hard to tell if he can win or not, but well, we'll have to wait and see.
One thing we certainly know, whether people are not like President Trump or not, he has won Ohio pretty handedly the last two times, last two presidential elections. And now that Renacci is working with, on an unpaid basis, Brad Parscale, who was President Trump's campaign manager, that would seem to me to be a big help for Renacci.
I imagine it would.
What do you think, now that we look back on it, obviously you're a Democrat and certainly not a supporter of Trump, but when you look back on his two runs for presidency, one successful, both successful in Ohio, what did he have that allowed him to win this swing state both times, and by big, pretty big margins?
Well, he had an appeal with his speaking, even though, you know, it didn't appeal to me. It did appeal to a lot of people. He had a style about him, and I think people like to listen to him speak, and that won people over.
The other day when I was speaking with the mayor, we talked about, Mayor Schertzer's been mayor here, obviously, for more than a decade now, and about how internet plays a part in campaigns, how President Trump's campaigns were kind of entertaining. This Vax-a-Million, a lot of people have called it hokey, but entertaining. Do you have to be entertaining as a politician now to get things done?
Well, you have to get the people's attention, and if you want to call it entertaining, I guess you could call it entertaining. You have to win them over with saying things that's going to appeal to them, and that they're going to agree with. That's what wins a candidate, is saying things that people will agree with.
Does it seem to you like if you are a politician now and you get up and you give a very good speech and you are very informed on your topic, that's good, but if you get up and you give a speech and you are not really informed, but you yell and you tell jokes and you do things like this, you'll get more attention?
That's true. That's evidently what happened.
Yeah. Well, and where does that put us as the voters who only see what we can see?
Well, it didn't appeal to everybody, Scott. It only appealed to a certain number, and it was a large number. The fact that he got more votes this time than last time was a surprise to me.
What do you make of the fact, I was talking about this with somebody last night, the presidential election was 7 months ago, and you can drive, including Marion, in a lot of communities in Ohio and in Pennsylvania, and Trump flags are still out.
Yes, I know. Yeah. I think that they still feel very strong about him, evidently.
Do you think he'll run in 2024?
I don't think so. I think things are going to possibly happen in this investigation that might put an end to it. I think that's coming along. We'll hear more about that, but I just really feel that he's got things in his background that's going to come out.
It is very interesting. We learned this week and some last week that the Trump Foundation is now being investigated in New York by the Attorney General on criminal charges, a criminal investigation. Now, they did not name anybody in that investigation, but now we're learning through sources that a grand jury has been convened, I believe in New York, and they are looking at is there enough evidence to indict, it's my understanding, President Trump, because he would be indictable at this point, being a former president. Is that how you understand what's going on?
Yes, yes, it is. It sounds like they're trying to get all their ducks in place before they do very much, but they're working on it.
You know, Mary Ellen, I don't think this has ever happened. Nixon was pardoned before he was indicted. What would it do to this country to have a former president indicted on a criminal charge?
Well, it would be, yes, it would be very unusual. And if there's any ex-president that should be, it would be him.
How do you think the country, because as you said, he remains a popular figure, how would the country react to a former president on criminal trial in a court?
I don't know. We'll have to see what happens with that. That's a very curious question, Scott. You know, whether people would stand by him or would they, you know, turn on him. I would be very anxious to see what happens.
You know, it's interesting because people talk about how well he did with the impeachments. He was being voted on in those trials by politicians. This would not be politicians. This would be a judge and possibly a jury. Do you think the outcome could be different?
Oh, yes, I do. All the people that were surrounding him while he was in office, they were protecting him. You know, if it hadn't been for his attorney general lying about the Mueller investigation and all the other things that he lied about protecting him, I think that things would have been a little bit different there.
In the long run, and we don't know what will happen with these trials or possible indictments, but when we look back at the 4 years of Donald Trump, he will always be a president. He had a term. How do you think people will look back on that time?
Well, some of us will look back differently than others. That's just about it.
Well, you know, obviously a big part of his presidency is going to be this pandemic. It arose during his time period. What is the legacy of this 14-month plus pandemic that has stretched through Donald Trump's presidency and now through Joe Biden's presidency?
Yes, It has been handled well since Joe Biden took over. You know, the fact that Trump ignored it is always going to be there, and that's, people are going to remember that. I think they'll remember the performance of the president under that kind of a situation. Kind of shows what sort of a person they are.
I think Joe Biden said yesterday or the day before that he now is tasking his administration with finding out within 90 days how this all happened, where this pandemic came from. Do you think we'll get some answers that we have not had so far?
I don't know. It's going to be hard to get that out of China. They're not very willing, I don't think, to share information with us.
Regardless of how our politicians handled it in the beginning, how did this happen in your mind? We know it started in, we believe it started in China. Did we just not take it seriously as Americans? It was in the newspapers in December and January, but nobody was paying attention to it.
That's true, and it hadn't really hit, you know, the communities yet. It was, you know, the first one was, where was it, in California? I don't remember where the first case was, but we were all sort of, you know, wondering what was going to happen, and the president said it was going to disappear, and a lot of people believed him, and so that's where it went. If somebody had taken it seriously in the beginning, I think we would have been better prepared.
You know, Mary Ellen, none of us have ever faced a pandemic in our life. The last one was well over 100 years ago. What has this meant to you in your life, the isolations, the vaccinations, the death of people?
Well, the hardest part was me not being able to visit my husband at the nursing home. I think everybody that had that situation really felt the situation was difficult and very difficult. And you know, people passed away during it, and they weren't able to be with them. And yeah, it was very sad for all of the things that happened.
There's a lot going on in the courts right now, state and federal, to the idea, can a business, can a school force its employees to be vaccinated? Do you think that is something that should be allowed or not be allowed?
Well, have we ever had it where they had to be vaccinated before?
Well,
is that the situation?
I know that there are certain inoculations you have to have if say you're going to get a job as a teacher, or if you're going to start kindergarten. There are inoculations that you do have to have. So,
oh, that's right. I remember about the children. Yeah. So as a teacher, you have to have certain vaccinations?
Yeah, you've had to have, and I know they also do certain tests to make sure you're not contagious with anything like tuberculosis or things like that.
Yeah, well, you know, if people don't willingly get vaccinated and the disease is still a severe problem, I mean, I think they're going to have to enforce it, but it just depends on what people do.
There was a story this week that came out that the CDC is now looking at heart conditions brought on by the vaccinations. It started out by saying in younger adults. I think that's still where it is, but when states go out and say it's absolutely harmless, that people will not see any, you know, long-term side effects, and then we see a story like this, it doesn't hit the public very well.
No, that's right.
Was there any way around this with how quick this vaccination was developed?
Well, that was a good thing. I mean, that was a really good thing that the companies came forth the way they did.
It's, do you think at any point, with the way just the numbers are right now, that we are going to reach that 70% goal in Ohio of vaccination?
I don't know, Scott. That's another thing we'll have to wait and see.
It really is a time of limbo right now. We have learned, though, that Dr. Amy Acton, who was a big deal in the beginning, she's decided not to run for the Senate in Ohio, but she is receiving a lot of awards. I believe she's getting an award from the JFK Association. She's being lauded nationally, but here in Ohio, she's still not a very popular person. What do you make of that?
Is that right? Well, I'm glad to hear she's being awarded the Kennedy. I had not heard that.
Yeah, I think it's I forget what the award is, but it's something from the JFK Association.
Well, it's Profiles in Courage is what it usually is. Is it one of those?
Let me look that up, a matter of fact, because I don't think that got a whole lot of attention, and we'll find out exactly what she is being awarded, but it's fascinating because in Ohio, I think she doesn't remain, it's Dr. Amy Acton among seven awarded for courage by JFK, Profile in Courage. Yeah.
Yes, that's a terrific honor. You know, I would say that's worth a lot.
Do you think for her part in the early stages of this that she's deserving of that?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
What do you think happened to her? She was running these press conferences. She was the face of this in Ohio, and nationally she got a lot of attention. And then one day she was gone, never to be heard from again.
Well, I think it was the threats from people that threatened her and scared her. She got scared, and her family. That's it's really bad when you start worrying about something happening to your family because of what you're doing. I think that's what happened.
Being a public figure, did you ever have any instances like that where people made a threat?
No, I didn't.
That's a good thing.
Yes, it is. And I don't know what I would do under that circumstance, because that is a very frightening thing when you do that to people.
Well, you know, the other day we talked on this show about it's okay. We have a right in this country to protest, and it's okay to go protest the state house, the courthouse, whatever it is. But people are starting to go to people's houses, and they went to her house.
Yes.
What do you make of that?
Well, that's what scares you. You know, they know where you live, and the statement, "I know where you live," and that's scary.
Well, here in Marion, it was an interesting week, and I still don't know the validity of it, but we have our case here with Judge Warner, and we learned that he and his wife will be or have been let out on bail until their appeal, and we got a report here at the station that as soon as they came home, that there were planned protests at the courthouse and at their home, and I don't understand why people go to people's homes.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Hopefully it doesn't. I mean, you can go to the courthouse and protest all day long, but going to people's homes.
Right. That's right. That's what is really scary.
Have you been surprised living in Marion during this whole Warner thing, which makes the front page of the paper every time there's a story about it? Have you been surprised people's anger and people have taken really personal feelings about this whole thing?
Yes. Well, I just felt that it was a terrible thing what he did, leaving that person in the car and not taking care of what he'd done, he or his wife, I presume it was him. A judge should have better judgment than that.
Well, that's been the great irony, I think, of this case, is this was a judge in Marion County who was known for handing out hard sentences, and then he becomes part of what they called a hit and skip, in which he doesn't report that it happens. What is the read on that? It looks horrible.
Yes, it does. I think that's the reason people are upset.
Are you surprised? Because when it was announced this week that he and his wife would be released from prison until the appeal is heard, people were angry again, obviously. And a lot of this goes to he's a privileged person. He makes a lot of money. He's a former judge. Do you think there's anything to that? Treated differently because of his position?
Yes, and, the fact that he's still drawing a salary, isn't he, while he's going through all this, his judge's salary?
I believe he was right up until the verdict, and I think they suspended it then.
Oh, did they?
I think when he went to prison.
Yeah, well, they should, yeah. I think that the whole thing, it has made people very upset about what he did, and He knows much better than that. I mean, it's not that he doesn't know all the law and everything.
Do you think that if it was just John Doe on the street who was in the same position, that they would be let out of prison on bail till the appeal?
No, I don't think they would, no.
Does that say something about our legal system?
Yes, it does, you know.
Yeah. And final question on this. The whole thing, and you mentioned it there, he did draw a salary, I believe, right up until the time the guilty verdict came down, which was almost a year after he had taken leave from his position. I don't think he ever did resign. What did you make of that? Taking a pretty hefty salary from a position while he was going under all this?
Yes, and it is a hefty salary. I was shocked when I saw how much his salary was and the judges. I was very shocked about that. You know, and I'm going to bring up Householder again. And there's another situation where something needs to be done by the legal system, and it's not happening. At least I don't know if it's happening. I don't hear anything. And it seems terrible that this person is still in his office in Columbus or wherever, and supposedly doing his job, which I think it'd be very hard to do under the circumstances.
Well, you know, Mary Ellen, it's very interesting. Judge Warner, to this moment, has never resigned. He's been convicted of a crime. Householder has been charged. The FBI agents did pick him up at one point. He not only has not resigned, but he won election by 70% after all that happened. Our auditor here in town is now under investigation by a group in city council, which Mayor Schertzer told me on the air he can never remember a time that that's ever happened to a city employee, and they have subpoena power. And Mayor Schertzer said the other day that this could result, not that it will with the auditor, but that it could result in criminal charges. But yet nobody ever resigns. Nobody ever it's a little different than it used to be.
Yes, it is. It seems like somebody isn't doing their job somewhere along the line.
When we look at a position like Judge Warner and Larry Householder, do you think they should have just resigned?
Absolutely.
The auditor situation seems a little different, but I think he has called it a mistake with the $1.28 million. Do you think, the mayor the other day, I don't know if you heard him when he was on here, but he said he felt that it was a lack of institutional knowledge by...
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
That's a good description of it. Anybody that sends that much money to the wrong place, he doesn't know what he's doing.
Well, that being said, and that he has refused help when offered by the mayor.
Yes. Yes.
So if we know those two things, and we also know that the mispayment did happen, should he resign? He's handling the money for the city of Marion.
Yes, I understand that. And, you know, not resigning, it's been a habit of Republicans not to resign when they're accused of something. And it seems like it kind of goes with the Republican Party.
You know, Mary Ellen, you're in a very unique position to answer this question because you have dealt with money in Marion County and certainly beyond over the years. You've been a local Marion politician, treasurer of Marion County. If you had made a mistake like this with $1.28 million in your day, would you have resigned your position?
Well, I didn't I would have to be in that situation to make that decision, but it's a terrible mistake to make. And when you lose other, when you're taking care of other people's money, it's so sensitive to everyone. And a treasurer is under a lot of watching that other people aren't. The treasurer is taking care of the money, and people pay a lot of attention to that. And to say whether I would have resigned or not, I would never have made that mistake in the first place, Scott.
Now, explain to people, because I think this is important from somebody who's been there, how could this mistake have been avoided by somebody in office?
Well, he could have called somebody that it was knowledgeable, like the Attorney General, and double-checked on this, I mean, before the money was sent. But I still don't understand how he could have done it, because it's very clear where you're supposed to send your money.
Well, and all that being said, knowing that here's what we know, I guess, for sure, and this will be the last question on this, but he didn't apparently tell anybody until apparently this all happened in June of 2020. Nobody was told until 6 months later. And I think they just found out. I don't think he ever went to anybody and told them.
Yes, then, that's right.
Then we find out that money was paid from another account that he did not have the authority to pay out of, and did that without any council vote or any consultation from the mayor. Now we have a special committee, which is having subpoena power, made up of two Democrats and a Republican, and the Republican is chairing that committee, Jason Shopper. All that being said, should, if you were Auditor Landon with that string of knowledge that we know, would you resign your position at this point?
I'm not going to answer that, Scott, because I would not make that mistake, number one.
I guess what I wish, what do you think he should do now that he has made that mistake?
Well, let the committee decide. They're evidently going to look into everything. Let them make the decision.
I guess it comes back to that idea again that you said earlier. People don't leave these positions. Whether or not they should, I guess, is left up to the people. Why don't you think people leave? Householder, Warner, they just don't leave.
Well, they don't want to give up the position, you know. They feel like they have won the election and they're in and they shouldn't have to give it up. But when they make a huge mistake, then I think it's a different matter. Things look a lot different. And of course, when is his next election? Is it in 2 years or when is it?
I believe he got in 2019. So I believe,
yeah, it's in 2 years. Yeah. So that's what a lot of times they think, that the you know, the people that elected them should put them out of office too, and I think that's what happens in many cases. But I don't know. Let the committee make the decision. They're working on it.
Have you ever heard of a situation like that in all your years of...
No.
Yeah.
No, I never did. No.
Yeah.
It's very, very unusual to have... And it's the amount of money that was involved, too.
The media certainly has covered this. Did you ever have any situation over the years when you were in local politics in which something was heavily covered by the local newspaper or the radio stations?
No, we had, well, when I ran for office, they accused me of things that most of them weren't true. But, you know, most of my newspaper articles were about the money I had earned for Marion County. Actually, it was $2 million overall. And I did, and it's it was covered well because I always let the people know what was going on. I mean, it was something that I reported to the Star whenever I thought there was something worth reporting, and tried to keep everybody knowledgeable on what was happening.
What was your success, secret to your success of being able to generate that kind of money?
Well, I think being honest with the people is the best thing. You know, I had an embezzlement in my office, and it was in the paper right away, and then they did the investigation on it, and came to a conclusion that it was a certain individual, and all that was honestly reported, and you can't hide things when you're in office. You have to be honest with the people.
On that embezzlement issue, how did you become aware of it, and what was your thinking? This is somebody you had worked with.
Yes, well, how I found out about it, somebody came in and said they had paid their taxes, and they had a bill that said they hadn't, and so we had the law enforcement came in and did polygraph tests on everybody, and it was all worked out very, very correctly, really.
Would you have ever guessed, working with this person who did this, that they would have done something like this?
Yes, I would not. I was very surprised. And the fact that I had, when I trained people, I said, you know, you have to have the tax stub, and you have to have that amount of money in the payment, and pretty much all of that was instructed to everyone, and she didn't follow the rules.
Mary Ellen, somebody asked me the other day, what year did you move from Marion to Columbus?
I didn't, you mean, I didn't move.
Or start working, I guess, out of Columbus.
Oh, start working?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 1982.
1982. So I figure, well, we're going to take a break here for about 15 minutes for news and weather. And when we come back, we're going to get away from some of the political stuff. And remember, because a lot of people, you were here during the blizzard of 78. And today's the last day of school for a lot of kids in this area. So we'll talk about your school days and what you make of education at this point. And maybe talk about some other historic events that happened over the years here in Marion, if you don't mind.
Okay.
All right. We're going to take a 15-minute break. Come back with Mary Ellen Withrow right after the news and weather. Stay tuned here on WWGH Radio.
Public and National Convention.
Good morning, we're on the air.
Hey, Charlie, it's Scott.
Scott? Oh, wow. Okay, we've been wanting to hear from you, Scott.
Well, I tell you, this morning I did something different. Yesterday we were outside with the protesters, so today I made sure we got here a little earlier, got through the checkpoints, and I am actually calling you from Cleveland, Ohio, Republican National Convention 2017.